a full-time, you know, lifetime career from the government employee.
What kind of discussions would the women have about issues that they would want to see perhaps raised within a union contract? Was there discussion of equal work or equal pay?
Equal opportunity was the main thing we wanted. During the last about 5 years that I was there, they had administrative courses available to men. And there was a considerable pressure from the active women to have those sort of things made available, to have it accepted that women could take administrative positions. And that if they were going to pay for the training of men to take them, they ought to pay for the training of women to take them. And their argument, of course, always was that well, there's no sense in training some of these younger women for these sort of things because they'll leave us. They'll get married and get pregnant and they'll leave.
Were there any other issues such as seniority or maternity leave?
I can't remember them as being very hot issues. They may have been concerns of particular individuals. Most of the women that I started work with were quite prepared to leave when they had babies. They weren't prepared to leave when they married, and they weren't forced to do so.
How about equal pay?
It was certainly an issue. But as I say, you know, the pay categories were okay as far as they went. It was just known and understood, but never written down anywhere, that there were certain categories that women fitted into and other categories that were only available to men.
And was that ever made into an issue, the fact that there was that kind of difference in job classification?
Yeah, one of the major occupations of the union was grievances. We had large grievance committees, and some of those were made as issues under grievance procedures. We gained some ground out of that, but the individual involved invariably lost ground because of it, and with a consequence that I certainly didn't encourage many people to go through that sort of procedure.
How did they lose ground, just in terms of their job security and ability to change jobs?
They were labeled in people's minds as troublemakers. And while they might get that particular increase or that particular reclassification, that'd be it. There'd always be some reason why they wouldn't go anywhere from there.
Okay. Were most of the grievances solved, resolved in the favor of the union, if they were put in? Or was it somewhat of a dead end to try and grieve issues?
They were solved. The union officials knew pretty well what was possible. And while they might like to fight something out on the basis of this is a principle, they were also humane enough to want to get the best for the person who with the grievance.
Right.
And they counseled them. So that sometimes the principle wasn't that great, you know. But they were solved.
Did the union have women on its leadership body? Such as, for example, you were in a leadership position. Were you one of the few women?
Yes, one of the few.
How did that feel? Did you think about it at all?
Oh, yes. For the first couple of years that I was on the provincial executive, I was the only woman there. And the then president used to say things like, "Well, gentlemen, and Joni," until I told him not to do it. Really, you know, you mustn't do that. I don't mind being one of the gentlemen, if you want to use that term, that's perfectly all right, but don't single me out. And they came to regard me as one of the fellows, okay? Mm-hmm. Which was the best I could do under those sort of circumstances.
Does that represent acceptance? Or?
Yes, yeah. Now, you know, this whole fight about chairwomen and chairpersons and all that sort of thing, I can see that it's really tremendously important, because it then sort of declassifies male and females in those sort of roles. Okay. The way I got in as first vice president was a maneuver to overcome that sort of thing, you see. I talked one of the executive members, a man, into nominating me for president on the condition that I would guarantee to decline it. And I made a very impassioned speech about, you know, our representation must be very strong, and that we mustn't appear that we are forced to elect a woman as president, you know, that there are men available who are, okay? Well, it was very carefully worked out, with the result that I was a shoo-in for first vice president, see? And this I did on the basis that the president was of retirement age. He was a fireman, and in actual fact, he died before his retirement, so that I became, by default, president, you see. But that was the only way I got to be president.
Because you wouldn't have won an election.
I wouldn't have. Simply because I was a woman.
So you were president of the Victoria local, or you were president of the entire association?
At the time that I left, I was president of both.
What were your duties then as president?
The main difference between that and any other executive member is to represent the union in negotiations, in meeting with the cabinet, with any other body that we were meeting with. We had yearly meetings with the other government employee unions across the country. I was a delegate to the founding convention of the CLC on behalf of our union. Those sort of things.
What kind of skills would you need?
What kind of skills would I need?
Well, you need to be a good speaker.
Yes. A logical thinker. Confidence was the main thing you needed. We had good staff. They did most of the work as far as preparation of materials went. You had to know how far you could go in leading the civil servants. One of the most exciting meetings I ever went to was the one where the Victoria branch voted to go on strike. And, there were 800 there. I was chairing that meeting, and it was extremely exciting. That I found very stimulating. That was my main skill, as a matter of fact, was chairing meetings.
Mm-hmm.
I do that very, very well. It's a particular odd talent, but I can divorce myself. You know, I can be objective in chairing a meeting, which is not everybody has that. So that was my particular talent, I would think.
Did you find yourself in the position of being, like, in terms of describing the Victoria local and this meeting, more militant than the membership?
Oh yes, I was much more militant than the vast majority of the Victoria members.
So what kind of, can you get at this, like, how, what would that mean in terms of being able to, how would you argue for people to become more militant, given that you, what would that
mean? I don't think I ever argued with them on that kind of a basis. So, you know, let's become more militant, and mm-hmm. these are why we should be more militant. But what I tried to show them was that here I was, a young woman with a minor job in the civil service, who was prepared to make this kind of a fight, to make this kind of a stand. You don't need to be afraid, you know.
Would you try and mobilize them around concrete issues?
Certainly.
What kind of issues came up then?
Well, I think they all focused on, we should have rights. We should know what our rights are. There should be something written down that there's no way we can fight nothing. It's impossible to say we should have equal rights when nobody's got any written rights.
Mm-hmm. Right. Okay. Did the union have a special column in the newsletter for women?
Madeline Johnson used to write a column for women. Did it quite well, too. I had very mixed feelings about those sort of things. I wanted women to be just persons.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt that it was important that we be not singled out in any way. You know, this question of the gentleman and Joan, you know, I preferred to be one of the gentlemen. I preferred to be one of the members rather than in a separate column in a newsletter.
Were there special issues, though, that women faced at all within the working situation?
I don't think that there was anything that was unique that they faced, other than this general discrimination that women are here only temporarily and they're really out to get a husband and they really, their function in life is to produce children and they're only here because they couldn't make it in that field, or so therefore they're kind of inferior, or they're, you know, just here temporarily. Other than that big general issue, I don't think there were particular things that concerned us.
Did women in the union take on any specific kinds of areas of responsibility? For example, in some unions, women tend to have been more active as shop stewards or on social committees and so on. And I wondered if that was at all true within the BCGA.
Well, whatever social convening was done by women, that's for sure. But there was nothing precluding them from any other role in the union committee structure or anything else, other than just a sort of general bias against them.
Were the women themselves afraid to take on those kinds of responsibilities?
Afraid.
Or lacking confidence around...
They were afraid to get up and speak. That was a major hang-up with many of the women. Because I can remember them saying, you know, how do you manage to get on this? When there are all those hundreds of people sitting around, you know. And so probably that was difficult for them. But we didn't make any particular effort for that. We did, you know, try to train men and women.
Mm-hmm.
To take part in discussions, we'd have sort of seminars and workshops for being able to express your ideas on your feet and public speaking, encourage people to take courses if that was helpful to them.
Were women active as shop stewards?
Yes. Probably about equal number with men.
There's pretty well an equal membership, male to female, in the association.
Is there now?
Or was there then?
In Victoria, there were certainly more women than men who were members.
Yeah. Okay. Was there a strong shop steward structure in the union?
Well, they were called departmental representatives, right. And they formed the branch executive.
Oh, I see. What kind of job would they perform in terms of the union?
Well, the executive met once a month, and they ran the Victoria branch. They made decisions of, well, setting up the office that we had there and running it and dealing with the initial grievance procedures before they were, if they could be resolved at the local level, the grievance committee would do that. Certainly any social events were convened at the local level. We had a branch superannuation committee. I can't remember the different other ones that we had locally, but everything that was done provincially was duplicated initially locally, so mm-hmm. that things were filtered through those committees.
Did you have regular local meetings?
We had a monthly executive meeting and a monthly general meeting.
And was the membership active?
Only if we were talking wage negotiations or strike issues were pending.
And were the union officials, the local officials, elected out of the membership?
Yes.
And when it was in 1974, I guess, that finally a contract was won in formal union recognition. It wasn't until then that civil servants were actually recognized as having
a bargaining agent. Yes.
Right. Amazing. How did the men in the union react to women being active within it? Were they generally encouraging?
Up to a point, they were encouraging, yes. They certainly did not like having the bulk of their membership people who had the sort of focus of their lives somewhere other than within that work body, which is what they felt with all of this vast number of young women employed in the by the provincial government in Victoria. And they, like the employers, felt that these were temporary sort of people. Although they had permanent appointments, they were, their main interest were their homes and families, or their future homes and families. It wasn't in making a career of the civil service. So they had an vested interest in getting those people interested and active. And certainly some of the people on the executive were very encouraged me to be more militant and encouraged me to take part in the more union type of things, to be delegates to various union bodies. The BC Fed, I went there as a delegate, and to the Labour Council in Victoria, I went there for a couple of years as the association's representative on that. And if they could have got other young women interested, I'm sure they would have done so.
Did they in part want to have you active in order to encourage other women to
be
active?
Sure.
Did that work?
I think so.
In what ways? Was it that women would see by example that it could be done?
Yes. Yeah. After as I told you, I was 2 years on the provincial executive. I was the only woman, and then there were two more elected. At the time I left, I think there were actually three, as well as myself, on the provincial executive, which was just great because we were just men and women together, you know, people, and I was no longer the odd one out. It made a really tremendous difference as far as my operation on the executive went.
Right. Did the union organize any activities to try and reach women's families who were employed in the civil service, like social events or something like that, so that they...
Oh, yes, we had a lot of social events.
What kind of things did that be?
Oh, dances and dinners and... yearly, the executive in Victoria had their executive dinner, to which the spouses or boyfriends or whatever were invited, and that was very carefully orchestrated to encourage the participation of the family, you know, to make the union participation more acceptable to the rest of the family.
Did the young women who worked in the civil service express at any point that it was difficult for them to be active within the union because of responsibilities at home? Even if they wanted to be, was that an issue that ever came up?
No, the apathy was the issue.
Okay. Was there any discussion of child care at all?
I can't recall any.
Were women who were active in the union politically active as well? For example, with any of the political parties?
In Victoria, no civil servant was politically active.
It was prohibited, wasn't it?
It was understood that you weren't. I was even dubious about joining the CCF, although I did join. But I joined through a cousin who was living in Duncan. I was up visiting her and she sold me a membership. And even my good friends in the mines department that I had mentioned this to used to tease me about it, you know, that I was one of those radicals. Dave Barrett, you know, everybody, certainly in the Victoria Civil Service, could understand why he would be fired for taking an active role politically, because you just didn't do that sort of thing, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You would expect to be fired.
Right. Was there any covert organizing done by, for example, the CCF?
No.
And were there any auxiliaries to the association? Like a women's auxiliary?
No, absolutely not.
Why do you say absolutely not?
Because there was some mention of doing such a thing, and we, the women were so much opposed to that that
why was that?
Didn't even get off the ground.
Why was there opposition to it?
Well, that would make you, you know, a second class citizen, which civil servants thought they were anyhow. You know.
So you'd be third class.
Yeah, somewhere down
way
there.
Way down.
Yeah.
Were there any women who you feel should be mentioned in terms of their activity within the association, helping to get it organized?
The ones I worked with on the executive, the one who is most outstanding in my thinking is Anna Arthur. Madeline Johnson, I already mentioned, as being very active in the Victoria branch, and Claire Scott. Claire got sort of sidetracked into the medical services end of it, and she was very active with that branch. Those were the main ones I can think of.
And they served on executive bodies? Or?
Well, Anna Arthur was on the provincial executive when I was there. There were a couple of other women who were also around, but I don't even remember their names now. Mm-hmm. They weren't that militant, but they were useful to me in sort of spreading out the attention, you know,
mm-hmm.
that Anna and I got, because we were no longer pushy women, you know. We were just one of the executive members.
Was there a lot of that kind of attitude from, I guess, the ranks, that you were sort of pushy women? That kind of...
It was something that I certainly felt that I had to continually guard against.
People resenting your taking
mm-hmm.
a leadership role.
Mm-hmm.
How would that come out? Do you remember at all? Any manifestations of that at all? Or?
Those sort of things are pretty subtle, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And no, I can't remember it now,
mm-hmm.
specifically how I was made aware of that. But I was certainly aware of it. That it was something that I must continually be careful about. That I mustn't ever threaten these men by wanting to take over what they regarded as their proper roles.
Which was to lead the union?
Yeah, well, I just wanted to join in and be part of this, you see, and take my steps as they came my due, just like anybody else there. So one would have to lay back a bit, yeah.
What would that mean when you were president? Were you supported by the rest of your executive as president?
Yes. Certainly. I was only president for a very short time because I left during that same year that I became president.
Oh, right. I should ask you, what years were you vice president and then president?
I can't remember. It was that final year that I was there was the year I was elected vice president. And I had taken over the presidency when George died. George Horridge was the president and he died. And it was only a few months after that that I resigned.
Mm-hmm.
I went back to university.
Right. Okay. When the union newsletter, I remember going through it, and I remember seeing the women's column for a few issues. Was there a decision to suspend doing a women's column?
No, it was just a question of who would do it.
Yeah, personnel.
Yeah.
Okay. I want to go back a little bit and ask. What effect did the war have in terms of bettering the possibilities of organization?
I have no idea, really, because I wasn't in the labor force before the war, and I really am not that aware. It must have had an effect.
Did union recognition, like the fact that the federal government recognized the right to organize, help people in the provincial government when they were trying to get the association?
I would imagine so. They'd made an attempt to start an organization previously, and those people had been fired, in fact. And I'm sure that Ed O'Connor could tell you more about that than I could.
Sure. Okay. And were there any specific policies during the war that affected provincial government workers, like no strike pledges or wage controls or anything of that matter that you remember?
I don't recall.
Yeah. And did people come into the government service who had had experience in war industries at all? And who would have been through the process of unionization there? This is both men.
Not that I met.
Right. What was the relationship between the BC Government Employees Association and other trade unions? Were there any unions specifically where there was a close kind of, like BCTF, for example, a close sort of working relationship?
No. They would send a fraternal delegate to our conventions, and that was about it.
Mm-hmm.
Possibly between the employees of our organization and their employees, there may have been a closer liaison, but not as far as the executive was concerned that we were aware of. BC Fed regarded us as being very weak sisters indeed.
Were you members of the Fed?
Mm-hmm.
When did you affiliate to it?
A few years before I left.
During the 50s?
Then. Yes, I guess so. Yes, it would have been during the 50s. And
why did you affiliate to it? It
was a long fight to get recognized as a proper bargaining unit for the government employees. It was a tough fight, and again, the Victoria branch dragged its feet. But in spite of those feelings, they joined, and it was when the BC Fed took some sort of political action that they withdrew the voluntary checkoff. That was shortly after I left. What would that be, in 1960? 1961 and thereabouts.
Right. Yeah.
They withdrew the voluntary checkoff. And that was because of some political affiliation that the BC Fed took.
With the CCF,
and
I think.
And because the government employees, some of their funds went into that, the government said they would no longer take them off on their payroll.
Yeah. So people joined the Fed because it would strengthen the case that the BCGA was a legitimate trade union.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Right. And did the Fed ever, for example, during the strike, ever decide to do any specific support actions for the government?
I'm sure they would have done whatever we asked them to.
Right.
We asked them to keep a low profile.
Yeah. Oh, right. Was that in order to... Why was that?
Because of the lack of militancy of our own members, and we didn't want to frighten them out of the action.
Right. Okay, let me just... Married at any point when you were working in the civil service?
No.
No. Okay. And you had said earlier that your family was not strongly pro-union.
No.
Did you continue to live with your family?
I continued to live with my mother. As I say, my father died shortly after I started work. And my mother and I continued to live together. We eventually had a suite of rooms in my brother's house. Mm. He was also a government employee at that time.
How did she feel about your trade unionism? Was that something you were able to resolve?
Oh, I converted her with no trouble at all.
Oh, great.
Well, she had was an intelligent woman and could see the value of it. I don't know how it would have been had my father still been alive. He was a staunch liberal, but and she'd always voted liberal up to that time. But no, that was no problem.
And you decided to leave the civil service to become a teacher?
Yes.
Right. Was there a high turnover of women who worked there?
Yes. Very high turnover. Yeah.
How long would people keep their jobs, women workers?
Well, they either kept them for just a few years, or they kept them for all of their working life, one or the other.
Why would they leave their jobs? Was it, in fact, to get married, or...?
Yeah, or to have a baby.
Was there any basis of people leaving in terms of conditions or job accessibility? Those kinds of questions?
I think specifically. No, I don't think so. People hate to leave Victoria, you know, once they're living in Victoria. And those are the people I would be familiar with.
Mm-hmm.
And even if it means taking a lesser paying job, they will stay there.
Were there any areas of the province where there were specifically active groups of women in the BCGEA other than Victoria?
Not that I'm aware of. Anna might know. She worked at Woodlands, I guess it was, and there may have been in some of the institutions.
Were there specific job categories where women were more active than others? For example, women who had maybe supervisory positions who were therefore had a long-term stake in...
No.
No. And what workers did the BCGEA have within its jurisdiction in terms of how far up the supervisory ladder were people?
Well, when it was an association, which was when I was there, we included, I think, at least one deputy minister.
Mm-hmm.
There was no cutoff.
Was that at all a problem in terms of union militancy, or did that...
Probably.
Could you expand on that a bit?
Well, it undoubtedly colored the thinking of some of the decisions that were made. And, you know, everybody was involved in making the decisions. That's why I say probably rather than yes, because I don't really know that it did. But it seems likely. And, you know, when I say that the lack of militancy in Victoria was due to many of the younger women who didn't have a career stake in their jobs, that, again, is a supposition on my part.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what caused their apathy.
Yeah.
I would have had to go and interview them all individually to say, you know, why aren't you more interested in getting better rights for women? But I suspect that was it.
Was the union posed as a way of getting rights for women at all?
Yes, certainly.
Okay. How was that done? How was the argument?
I think it was generally accepted that was so.
Mm-hmm.
It was commonly spoken of. It was, there were, as I told you, there were at least two meetings,
right.
Special meetings held where women's rights were considered. And they were always in the forefront of convention resolutions and the debate on for the convention.
What were some of the resolutions, do you remember, where women's rights came up?
No, I don't.
Okay. Okay. Do you feel that the work that you did within the union was effective in terms of winning rights for workers?
In a small way, I do feel it was effective. I think that during the years that I was in the association, women accepted their part, their responsibility toward the union, much more so than they had done when I was first in it. That it became much more accepted by the men that women did have a role to play in it. And certainly in terms of the employers dealing with unions, they accept women as part of the labor force that is going to bargain with them. And I've seen this in employer roles since that time. I'm now on the local school board and we deal with the unions there. And I can see the women taking a much larger role than they used to when I was in within the workforce. And I think that I helped to move it somewhat.
Great.